Every day, Bill Frank...
We're going to be doing one thing, and one thing only.
...talks with the best guests in America about business.
You mean business?
Monkey business?
Are you ready to get down to business?
All right! Everybody's here, and that means we can get down to business.
Entertainment.
Entertainment.
The entertainment capital of the world.
What kind of entertainment?
It's a storm of entertainment that brings down the house.
Sports.
Game on.
A grueling test of strength, speed, and stamina.
Wow, just like in the pros.
And the local community.
The rage in local radio.
Find out what's going on locally.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time now for the Bill Frank Radio Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA. Now, here's your host.
Bill Frank.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. You can also hear me streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. The Bill Frank Show is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation or ask a question, you can always call us at 289-1520. Or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-289-1520. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. Each of my guests will share his or her perspective on one of these topics. My next guest is an expert in cyber intelligence, internet forensics. We'll discuss the disturbing facts about cyber threats to business and to government on the internet. Bruce Anderson is an ex-police detective and a specialist in cyber intelligence, internet forensics, and cyber investigations. His passion is helping victims track down anonymous attackers and repairing their personal and corporate brands from malicious and defamatory attacks. His law enforcement experience, combined with his IT security and counter-hacking measures and search engine tactics, allow him to help individuals and corporations identify their anonymous attackers and bring them to justice. Bruce is the founder of Cyber Investigation Services LLC and Reputation Defense Online, joining us from Florida. Hi, Bruce. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Well, terrific, and thank you for being my guest. I want to jump right into this because all of a sudden, security and threats on the internet have become very, very important just in this past week alone. There are several cybersecurity stories in the news. For example, Flame Malware, now it's sometimes also known as Flamer or Skywiper, is a program that is being used and been targeted for cyber espionage in Middle Eastern countries. And it was discovered by Iran's Computer Emergency Response Team. Flame, for those of you who don't know, Flame attacks Windows-based computers only. It has been called the most sophisticated and complex malware ever discovered. And Flame can spread to other systems over a local area network or by a USB stick. Flame records audio information, screenshots, keyboard activities, and network traffic. And then the program also records Skype conversations, and this is my favorite. It can turn the infected computer into a Bluetooth beacon that then can download contact information from nearby Bluetooth devices. And then all of this data gets transmitted back to some command and control server somewhere around the world. Now, Iran is blaming the United States and Israel for this Flame malware attack that's there. Will Iran ever be able to figure out who launched the Flame cyber attack against them? And if so, how?
If that's the question, will they be able to figure it out? Well, they typically in all of those different types of malwares, if you will, that you put in, you can generally figure out where it's phoning back to, but there's going to be such a cyber trail of hiding that it may be very difficult. I mean, we're still debating whether or not the Stuxnet virus several years ago that took down Iran's nuclear reactors and whatnot, whether or not that was involved with the U.S., and we're still debating that, but consequently is... probably not, to be answered. Be a lot of speculation, but I don't think you're going to have the government come out front and center and admit it.
Well, chances are it won't. Now, the United States government has come out and publicly acknowledged that we are developing spyware and cyber intelligence software, but it has never publicly come out and said that we're using it and implementing it. You mentioned the Stuxnet virus. This is one of my favorites. For those people who are listening who are not techies like you and me, who maybe don't know the story, do you mind telling us the story about this? Because I think this is just one of the funniest and most fascinating stories out there.
Yeah, the Stuxnet virus was really develop to go in and infect nuclear reactors. And what it would do is it would work its way into the systems and basically destroy them. And so what someone did, you know, people speculated the U.S., as opposed to going in and dropping a bomb on the nuclear reactors of Iran, is that they infected it through malware, and which destroyed all the nuclear reactors by doing it that way. And that is, like I said, has been speculated as to who does it, but it shows you what malware can do today, and that's what is so scary about the flame weapon, is because it can not only go in and infect a bunch of computers. So I could, for instance, infect the entire DOD and all the computers and take screenshots and know what all their files are doing and collect traffic back and forth and see what their real servers are. I mean, I get the whole identification of the entire network of a Department of Defense if I wanted to. If I wanted to, I could shut all the files down, delete them all, and wipe them out. And so that could be applied to that. That could be applied to Wall Street, that could be applied to utilities, that could be applied to a lot of things, and that's what makes it scary.
It does make it scary, and I want to stress the fact that I don't think that's the funny part. The funny part is how it was discovered. Now, Stuxnet, we don't know how long it was actually in use and was attacking these nuclear reactors, but it was discovered in 2010 when it first came to light. The story behind that was kind of funny. It was developed, and some Iranian tech who brought in his own personal computer from home just to do some diagnostics on one of those reactors, or I think it was a centrifuge, was doing some work on the centrifuge. And he unknowingly picked up the Stuxnet Vidrex because it was part of the network when he was doing his diagnostic. He takes it home, and then he plugs back into the Internet at home, and all of a sudden Stuxnet goes out over the entire Internet and starts infecting the world because, as far as Stuxnet knew, this was, hooked up to a centrifuge, and so it sent it out over the entire Internet. It goes to show you how incredibly pervasive and how incredibly dangerous this malware, these viruses, can be. My guest is Bruce Anderson. Bruce, let me ask you this. Is this the new method of warfare for the 21st century? I mean, President Obama, when he was in office, knew, because of Stuxnet, pretty much what the map of all of the servers inside of Iran's nuclear reactors looked like, because he was gathering that information using that virus. Is this warfare of the 21st century?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The like it or not, this is one of the most prevalent things on the minds of our military and of our government today, is defending our nation and from around the world of attacks that could absolutely cripple our entire infrastructure. You don't have to put a bomb in the middle of New York City, but if you shut down the financial system by infecting the entire financial system and whatnot, you would cripple the United States. And the technology is there. It's capable of doing it, and it is why it is so serious.
Well, as damaging as the terrorist attack on September 11th in 2001 were, think about how devastating it would be to bring down our power plants or our telecommunication system or, as you mentioned, our banking system. So my question to you, Bruce, is this. All right, we've got the government working very hard to prevent it, but do we have the right people working on the job? I mean, the smart ones are the ones that are actually out there developing the malware, aren't they, and not the ones who are there trying to defend it. The ones who are developing the malware almost always have the advantage.
They have the advantage, not necessarily in the smarts, because we've got a lot of smart people in the government that we've recruited, and we have brought in a lot of talent and a lot of people that were already hackers that have already proved themselves, et cetera, and that we've brought them in into the government fold. So there are a lot of those types of people there. So we do have the brains, we do have the intelligence. The problem is that America is such a target, and there are so many people abroad that are hacking, if you will. And so when you constantly get attacked by massive numbers, somebody's going to get something figured out. And that's part of what the challenge is. I attend a variety of different conferences with the FBI and Department of Defense and those types of things. And, you know, I mean, the Department of Defense, I forget the numbers, but, you know, several hundred times a day that they that someone tries to attack and get into their sites. And while we talk about that, and that is serious, and the government has got some, you know, are doing some very significant things with that, but the challenge with that is that everybody else really doesn't get the level of attention because local police do not have the training and equipment in order to do stuff. And where other folks are doing, we're seeing things like law firms, we're seeing things like oil companies, we're seeing things like accountants that are now also being hit by state actors in order to be able to steal information, pivot into key targets that they can steal intellectual property, and we're getting stole blind. There's more money leaving the United States right now due to the intellectual property and plans and those types of things than we can ever imagine. And unfortunately, there's just not the manpower to handle all that.
My guest is Bruce Anderson. He's the CEO of Cyber Investigation Services, LLC. And Bruce, that's just a perfect lead into my next question, which is, how vulnerable are most American companies? I mean, what type of companies is a cyber criminal most likely to attack?
They are after, and again, you have to define cyber criminals, okay? These days, and hacking used to be, you know, people think of them as a bunch of kids just having fun in a basement, you know, trying to wreak havoc and whatnot, and that's changed. And, you know, yeah, you've got those, but what you have is that you have both organized crime, which they construct things in order to be able to steal money and they're very creative in how they do that. But then you also have a lot of state actors, and by state actors I mean countries like Russia and China, to name specific, because they're the most active out there. And what they're after is they're after intellectual property. I mean, when you can avoid spending millions of dollars on research, millions of dollars in production, millions of dollars of legal fees and all that, and you can go in the swoop of a few months, go steal all that from a corporation and then employ that in your own country and whatnot, pretty cheap. And then they can beat you to market with those particular products. And that's what's going on.
That's a frightening proposition. My guest is Bruce Anderson. So, Bruce, let's bring it down to the individual level then. How vulnerable are most ordinary citizens to cybercrime? I mean, what are some of the most common cybercrimes, and how does one spot them?
Okay. What we're seeing today, and we deal with multiple cases a month, we're seeing a lot at the everyday level, stalking and harassment. We're seeing hacking into companies, into individual computers. We're seeing fraud, stealing people's money. We're seeing internet defamation, where, and this has become very prolific, where you've got competitors and ex-employees and these types of things that try to take down companies, and someone that knows what they're doing can absolutely destroy a company in 3 to 6 months. You've got intellectual property theft that you just talked about. We have extortion, we have tortious interference, money laundering. Pretty much what used to be all offline, today the crime of choice is online.
That's a frightening proposition. Let's go back to something you said at the beginning there, stalking and harassment. I mean, we see a lot in the newspapers today about cyberbullying. Is that a form of something that you investigate? And talk to us about the proliferation of cyberbullying.
Cyberbullying is a phenomenon that, you know, we see a lot in the with the kids. And we try to teach them a lot. We're trying to educate them. But the fact of the matter is that it's not stopping it. And so what it's really going to take, I believe, and this is just my personal opinion, but I think it's going to take a combination of private sector and public sector, if you will, in order to be able to stop this. Because pretty much you can catch who's doing this. But the problem is that if you report bullying today to the police, and they go, okay, well, you know, who was it? And they go, I don't know. Well, when you figure it out, let me know, and then we'll go after them. And that's kind of the conversations that happen all over. But if you can really start to work at the top levels of creating sophisticated traps that really can monitor what's going on as to who's bullying who, collection of those IPs, and then coordinate that with the local police and the district attorney so that it's pretty easy to turn around a subpoena and identify who that person is, then you can start to make some stops and make some inways with some of these kids. But but a lot of kids, that kids are kids. They've got this technology. They think they can hide. They think no one can find them out. And the truth of the matter is they can be caught, but the local police just do not have the time and technology and sophistication, if you will, to deal with this most of the time. So it's going to take a more organized attack, if you will, to be able to nip that in the bud, where the kids now believe and know, because of prosecution and those types of things, that they can get caught and will get caught.
My guest is Bruce Anderson. He's the CEO of Cyber Investigation Services, LLC. So, Bruce, if people are intrigued by what you have to say, obviously you're a wealth of knowledge in this area, and they want to learn more about you, learn more about your company, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I would direct them to go to our website, which is cyberinvestigationservices.com, and it tells a lot about what we do and the different types of things that we investigate and our background and information that they can go from there. Most of the folks that we get that come to us are at a place where it has gotten very serious, and most of our cases typically end up either in civil litigation or criminal arrest. And so folks have... The most common thing I hear from them is when they come in is, I've been to the police, I've been to the FBI, I've been to my attorney, and nobody can help. What can you do?
And you're the one to call when they need help. My guest has been Bruce Anderson, the CEO of Cyber Investigation Services. Bruce, thank you so much for being my guest here on the Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.